It is time for the Berkshire Edge on air. You can find the Berkshire Edge at theberkshireedge.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And on Wednesday mornings, we are joined by both David and Marcy. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Good morning, good morning. Yes, I like the traveling Wheelbarrows myself.
Well, good. Yeah,
Bob D. and his wonderful band, his wonderful collection of friends.
Oh, man.
Well, and the album, of course, comes with a little video that you could see them. They're riding on a train.
Well, that's it. That's exactly right. On that
end of the line.
End of the line, right.
And on this clip, they updated it so that showed the empty rocking chair from when Roy Orbison died.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
It's just a great super group. All right. Well, we've got a super group of journalists here.
That's right.
There's Marcy in the background there.
You hope.
Let us go right to some of the stories that we when we go through the stories, folks, these are just literally a fraction, some highlights of what is covered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at theberkshireedge.com.
Yeah. Plus the calendar.
Yeah. Plus the calendar. That's right. Plus the calendar.
Tell you everything that needs. That's around for you to see.
All right,
and
you need it nowadays because with all the cancellations that are coming up.
Well,
anyways.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what
to
do.
I know, it's amazing.
I think instead of just taking things off the calendar, I need to say canceled
or call ahead.
Right. Yeah.
Bring a mask.
Yeah. All right. That's right. I don't laugh at this, folks, but people in the media. These are the things we think about because we take in a lot of stuff, and sometimes people don't let us know. And let's go to the EPA again, ladies and gentlemen. To remove PCBs from the Housatonic River.
Stories, and we will continue to have lots of stories about the cleanup, the settlement between the Environmental Protection Agency, the Region 1, here in New England, and the General Electric Company to remove the carcinogen PCBs, which the General Electric had allowed to be dumped into the river, the Housatonic River, back in the 30s. I mean, it was just an incredible amount of material that has embedded itself into the riverbed and the river banks because the river would flood, and
no,
so it's been a 25-year right a 25 and yes, that's right, and they knew all along that it was a carcinogen, but they've and they allowed their own workers to wade chest deep in this stuff too. The pyrenol coolant that was used to make to keep transformers, big, huge industrial transformers, from exploding and overheating. But their workers, I've seen pictures of them wading waist deep in this material, in this fluid, insulating fluid that the company knew was dangerous. Be that as it may, we're trying to get it out of the river and out of the environment. And there's been a settlement between, as I said, the EPA and General Electric to remove it. It's the argument is where to put the PCB saturated sediment and how to deal with that. So we've had numerous stories about it. And they've finally, as our headline says, the parties involved in this are wearily embraced a settlement of a method of trying to restore the river to its to some healthy state. They're going to have the EPA has proposed a quarry in which a quarry that will be lined. And that the PCB sediment will be dumped into this quarry
in Lee.
Lee. The really saturated PCBs will be shipped to a treatment facility out of state. But there's a lot of material that would be put in, removed from the river and trucked a few miles upland, and that has brought on lots of protests from people who are saying, "Wait a minute, you're just moving it from one place to another place. It's still here.
Yes,
we don't want it here."
And the place where it's supposed to be dumped in Lee is only about 1,500 feet from the river. So there's,
as the crow flies.
Yeah, right. But so there's concern that it will leach.
Well, of course it will.
So,
sooner or later, it will. There's nothing is permanent. I mean, unless they have, unless they hire people 24 hours a day, once a day, to go out and check it all the time, for eternity, to know when.
Well, they
when
can't.
I know,
and they can't check it because this is going to be a lined dump. I mean, it's going to be, you know, they're going to line the bottom and then they're going to put this stuff in on top of it, and there's really no way to check that.
You can't
dig
guarantee
down
it
underneath and see if it's leaching.
Well, there is a GE as part of this settlement. GE has agreed to consider alternative methods should they become available, and one of those methods is something called thermal desorption, in which the sediment is heated up, and it is heated to such a temperature that it breaks the polychlorinated, the PCBs, down into components that are not supposedly dangerous. And they've agreed that should that technology be proven to be workable, they would deploy that too. So,
and you've got a second story that we're going to talk about here, and this is
actually, before we leave this first story, though, I do want to recommend that we have an environmental lawyer named Mary Douglas, who is in Washington, who used to work for the EPA and, continues to have terrific contacts. And she wrote us a very, very interesting article called Parties Wearily Embrace Housatonic River Remediation Settlement. We posted it on Sunday, March 8th, if people want to look for it in the news section. But yeah, Mary Douglas is the author, and it is a very interesting article about how the EPA and General Electric finally came to this this settlement, and nobody's happy with it. So I recommend this to your listeners. This is a very, very good summary of, you know, of how we got to this place, this background.
But your second story about the Great Barrington Board of Selectmen are also facing criticism. Some want to schedule a town meeting to vote whether the town should be party to the agreement. And I would think the reasoning be behind that if the town is not a party to that agreement and something goes wrong, the town has options available to them.
Well, the environmental activists who are concerned about the effectiveness of this proposed cleanup, there are five towns involved in this cleanup, that were party to this agreement, starting in Pittsfield and goes all the way down to Sheffield, which is on the Connecticut line. And by the way, Connecticut itself is not exempt from this contamination,
because the river goes through it.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, some of the PCBs also pooled that far away. But in any case, environmental activists have suggested, the town of Great Barrington Select Board has suggested that the town at town meeting, which is coming up in May, vote on whether or not to have the whole town vote on whether or not to accept this kind of settlement proposal. So that's going to be an interesting debate that's going to take place at town meeting.
And the reason this is newsworthy is that all of the suggestions for the issues to be discussed at the town meeting, what is called warrants, were supposed to be submitted already. I mean, I think it's past the point of submitting them. So the Select Board is making an exception to allow this to be added.
They're going to have
the only way you can have something added after the deadline is to have the Select Board add it, and so that is what that's what's happening.
Your next story. I'm 67 years old. I've lived in towns that in New York State that don't have this type of government that we have here in New England. But in West Stockbridge, the selectmen, Board of Selectmen, fired the town's fire chief on conflicts of interest. This story popped up on, and I don't know how many comments you've gotten on it, but it's an amazing story to me out here in the hinterlands.
Why? Just because, you know, scandals, you know, in unethical municipal employees are everywhere, including in little towns like West Stockbridge. It was quite a scene there in the at the select board.
But why is it? I mean, because people never get fired, or
no? Because when you're looking at small town fire departments and volunteers and stuff like that, normally it's not as detached as in big cities and stuff like that, where you have paid fire department. You know, there's normally a closer eye on it on a day to day basis, and people don't normally. It just doesn't. I've never seen it happen in this state where something like that has happened with a fire department.
Well, also, you expect that this is a volunteer fireman. Yeah. People are not shaking down residents.
That's what I mean. They're community members that are volunteering.
Well,
and so I can't explain it any more than that. That it seems like the ultimate sin.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, and it's funny because he had a lot of. I mean, the whole fire, the rest of the fire department stood up for him, of course, and they all walked out in protest when he was let go. But this has been brewing for quite a while, and we actually had a story about it about 6 months ago, somewhere around September. About, you know, when this began, there's a new select board member named Eric Shimalonis, who has had the courage to speak out. I mean, he's new. He's fairly new in town, so he's not part of an entrenched organization there. And he raised the question, and now I know friends of mine who live in West Stockbridge now had a suspected fire in the middle of the night, and this fire chief came out, and somehow they were left with the impression that they had to give him a gift, which they did. I mean, they sent him a gift afterward to thank him for paying attention to their fire. Now, I can only imagine that there was some suggestion made that it would be nice for them to give him a gift, and that's what they did. They didn't give him money. They gave him a book, but still.
It's
unusual that you give gifts to people who.
Normally what people do when a volunteer fire department or volunteer ambulance squads report, you're just smart. I mean, you make a donation after they've helped you. That's just something that's part of living in a small town.
Yes, right. Yeah. But you don't give it to.
No,
to
not directly to the person. No. No, so.
Well, this guy, Peter Scorpit, is the fire chief. He had been investigated by the State Ethics Commission And he agreed to pay a civil fine of a penalty of $5,000. So this was not just a feud, but actually, you know, he was really bound to be violating
it. There's a course of action that has to be followed. I mean, it's just plain and simple. That's what it is.
And also the department itself was apparently not functioning very well. And there were lots of complaints about that. So, in any case, he was charged with violating conflicts of interest by benefiting his relative, his family. So, there were some. Apparently, this had been stewing for a while, and finally, one of the selectmen there just had had enough of dealing with Scorpit, so he's out.
Right. Well, we'll go from that, and as you said in your lead to me, and of course, what news lineup would be complete without a mention of the coronavirus?
Yes, we've had. Well, you know, it is here.
Yeah.
I think news reports have said that there are. Countywide, there are so far 5 confirmed cases, but we have a number of responses to this, and one of them was from a nurse who wrote us, and a writer who happened to write a story about saying. That she felt the governor, Governor Baker, had been slow to react to the potential of a pandemic. And she wrote a scathing criticism of his state's response that she thought the state was, that he was putting the people at risk. And then we have a columnist, Carol Owens, who writes a column every week, who did a history of pandemics in the Berkshires of the past. And, of course, you know, I have to say that, you know, it's SARS is, I mean, the coronavirus is serious, but it's not the Black Plague, let's put it that way.
It is neither the Black Plague nor Ebola.
Right.
The thing I like
to say is, we here in the Northeast, whenever in the wintertime, when there's a snowstorm predicted, we prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And I think that's really the theme of logic that has to go along with this coronavirus. You prepare for the worst and you just hope for the best. And if the best comes, well, hey, that's terrific.
And one of the unfortunate things currently is that many more people, especially of not a certain age, don't have supplies for more than a day. Because they don't think about that.
Yeah. No. Because you can easily go to the store.
Right. And you just go get such and such. And so they're living in such a little, you know, a sliver of a day to organize that, you know, it's funny. It's either feast or famine because I've seen people buying way more than they need. But, you know, it's okay to have a couple extra rolls of toilet paper.
Right. Right.
That's a...
I think you cannot buy hand sanitizer anywhere in the Berkshires anymore. You cannot buy rubber gloves anymore. You can't buy the elements that go into making hand sanitizers anymore. And I know that Mario Cuomo, who is not our governor, but he went on the radio the other day and was complaining about price gouging by stores who still had hand sanitizers. And apparently he is having the inmates of the prison make hand sanitizer, which you can make from rubbing alcohol and aloe, neither of which is available anymore in the Berkshires. And he said if the price gouging doesn't stop, then the state is just going to sell its own.
He's made
or
it.
Or give it out.
He's made it, $6
which
a bottle.
Interesting. But, you know, I spoke to the buyer at the Big Y, our local supermarket here, who said, you know, people have come in and bought, you know, boxes of them, and so they don't have them anymore.
Yeah.
All right, we have about 2 minutes left, so which story would you like to hit on the last two stories?
Well,
we could do both, but let's talk about the very final one we should mention is the story about the latest marijuana shop in Great Barrington is unique in that it's women owned. How about that?
All right, there we
go. Equal opportunity is it equal opportunity market?
Okay, and the last minute and a half, you want to talk about?
But we do have a really nice story from our writer Hannah Van Sickle on a group of women who got together to raise money for underprivileged women and girls, and it's a philanthropic effort, and the way they raise money is that they have these dinners. And they've raised $1,000 so far. And it's a really interesting, and they've raised more than $100,000 over the course of their efforts to help underprivileged women and families. And so it's an interesting, they gather once a month and share a meal, and it's a kind of under-the-radar kind of philanthropic effort that these women
I've been to one of the dinners. I haven't gone often, but it's very nice. What happens is the women come together. It's a potluck dinner. Everybody brings something to eat for the rest of the group. And then there is a presentation about the organization that the money from that evening is going to support. These are not local organizations that are being supported because Dining for Women is a national organization. And so they are, you know, the local chapter is in sync with the initiative on the national level so that the money that gets collected gets pooled with money that's collected from all over the country. And a significant amount of money is then donated to this, you know, and it's usually a third world organization devoted to women.
Okay.
So it's a very interesting organization. It has caught on. I mean, it is slightly under the radar, but a lot of people know about it. And
they have 500 members.
Yeah.
They have two other. There are two other chapters. There's one in Salisbury, for instance, and one in Pittsfield. And they have. So it's quite an active group.
All right. We are flat out of time. We've got the network join coming up.
Yes, okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you very much.
We'll
talk to you next week.
Thank you. Bye.
The Berkshire Edge, theberkshireedge.com. On the web, theberkshireedge.com. That's where you can find that.